Welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today are two freelance football writers. First, we've got Helen Rowe Wilcox. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not bad. Your second time on the podcast?
It is, yeah. Very excited to be back.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming back. And Greg Lee as well, who writes for The National and 442. How are you doing, Greg?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
You can become a bit of a regular now, aren't you?
Yeah, I think this is fourth time now, so yeah, can't get rid of me.
First time's a charm, you're back again. Beautiful stuff. It's been international break this week, well, for the last 2 weeks, actually, and we're heading back into the club season. But before we do, there's been a little bit more action that we need to kind of go over before we get back to action in the Premier League. First of all, how did you spend your international week, you guys? I mean, it's kind of become a bit of a thing that fans deride a bit, hasn't it? It gets in the way of the club season. Some people like it, some people don't. How was yours, Helen?
Mixed. I watched the England friendly game, didn't watch the Lithuania game because I went to watch Beauty and the Beast instead. along with the rest of Peckham, I think the whole of Peckham went to see Beauty and the Beast when we went to see it. And then just watched Blackpool and watched the lower leagues.
Yeah, so. Fair enough. It did carry on, didn't it, while the other
kept forgetting that, but it did.
Greg, how did you spend your international break?
Yeah, pretty similar, really. Watched a couple of games, the Germany game included. Not the Lithuania game either, I was away. I was in Manchester, actually. Mm. Nice visit.
Were they not showing it in Manchester?
Yeah, well, I was actually on the train back from Manchester at that point, which I didn't realise I'd booked it during kick-off time, but in the end, not too fussed about that.
Did you either of you catch the France-Spain game?
Yeah. Or?
So there's a bit of video technology going on there. It's been all the rage on Twitter. A lot of opinions going both ways. What did you make of it, Helen? Were you into what happened? Obviously, two goals disallowed correctly against France.
I think it was important.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have ended up 1-1 and it ended up 2-0, which was the right result. And, well, players spend more time on the floor rolling around if they're not actually injured than it took to make the decision. So I think it's important to bring it in.
Mm. The second decision took a little bit longer than the first, which has led to some people being a bit critical of that. What did you make of it, Greg?
Yeah, I think I agree with Helen. I'm broadly in favour of it. I think there is going to be a bit of a delay in these things, and if the right decision is reached, I think that's probably a positive. The one thing against it generally that I think could become a problem is the more minor decisions. So, for example, if in the build-up to that goal, had there maybe been a throw-in awarded the wrong way, something like that, that also affects the outcome. But obviously the review system isn't used for that type of thing, so I think that could be an issue which crops up in the future. But yeah, I'm broadly in favour of it.
I think a story's just come out that referees will want the actual decision-makers on the video replays to be in the stadium or on the sidelines, I think, rather than a van outside. So maybe that it won't be something of time delay, because we're talking seconds in terms of the decisions, but maybe having more of a conversation between the officials might help it. Because one thing I didn't like personally was how it seemed to take a bit of the authority away from the referee, because he was just standing there like a bit of a pudding on the field waiting for somebody else to tell him what was right and wrong. So maybe that would be better in the future. But just going back to the lower leagues, obviously, in football, you want things to be as consistent as possible. Do you have any fear as a Blackpool fan and a fan of lower league football that what might be good for the top leagues in international football might not filter down to the lower leagues? And then, obviously, you've got the same problems with referee standards down there.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, if you look at other sports, though, like the tennis only has video. You can only go to the videos in, like, the Grand Slams. You can't go into any other ones. So I think even if you do it like that, then it's not going to be too bad. I do think it's important having it in the Premier League, though, 100%.
Mm. Well, as everyone says, the stakes have never been higher, really, at the top end of football. So probably need to get those errors sorted out. And having seen all the results in the international week, I was going to ask as well, any teams that you're seeing pop up as your favourites for Russia next season? Next season? I should say next year, next summer, after next season.
Yeah, not long to go now, really, when you think about it. I think Brazil are the team that have caught the eye under Cheech. They've won every game under him. They've already qualified now, the first team qualified, along with the host Russia. And they seem to have found a formula which kind of gets the best out of their star men, Neymar, players like that. But also
Coutinho as well.
Yeah, Coutinho, yeah. But the collective seems to be a lot stronger. They seem quite well organised, good discipline there. Under Dunga, they kind of lost their way a bit, and it's really been an appointment that has served them well. So I think they're probably the early favourites at this stage.
Mm. Helen, any teams that have jumped out?
I'd go with Germany.
Ooh,
I mean, they're obviously defending champions. They've had a great run so far.
Mm.
So I think personally they're the ones to beat.
New generation coming through as well. Mm-hmm. All the kind of older heads have retired now, and it'll be interesting to see. As we're going to come on to a bit later on with players like Dahoud coming through, could be the stars of the future. Be interested to see how they do in Russia next summer. Moving on now to the Premier League, it's the Merseyside derby this weekend, as some people might have heard. Liverpool host Everton, big game of the weekend between two clubs that have suffered from injuries in international break. Adam Lallana will be missing for Liverpool. Firmino is likely to play, but he was taken ill during international duty for Brazil, while Seamus Coleman obviously got that horrendous leg break after being tackled by Neil Taylor for Wales, and Funes Mori was taken off for Argentina as well. So Everton also going to be without two of their key players. Who are you expecting to cope the best with those problems, Helen?
I think Liverpool will. I think for Everton, Coleman's just a huge blow. He's been such an influential player this season that I think they're really going to struggle. Like, it's the first game they're going to have without him. They've not had that much time to get prepared without him since international break's finished. And I just think they could really struggle on that side.
Adam Lallana, I don't think he was on fire early in the season. I don't think he's scored or created a goal since the turn of the year. Would that really be as big a miss as he might have otherwise been early in the season, Greg?
Possibly his form has maybe tailed off a bit, but I still think he is really important. And in these derby games, it'll be kind of really frenetic game, really fast paced. And he's got the ability with very little time to kind of move the ball on. He's really good in tight spaces, can play off either foot. I think he will be a big miss for Liverpool. He's been really good in that midfield three, slightly different role this year. But yeah, I think he will be a big miss, and Liverpool will have to cope with that if they're going to win this one.
And Jordan Henderson, even if he does come back, he's probably going to be half fit. Are you in agreement with Helen that even though Liverpool are going to be missing players, it's Everton that are really going to suffer?
Yeah, I guess Everton don't have the squad. Liverpool obviously have got squad issues themselves, but Mason Holgate will maybe play it right back, who I think is a good player, but Coleman is very key for them, and they will suffer, but they've got some big players themselves. Everton, they're in great form, so I wouldn't rule them out.
But on that point, Everton haven't won Anfield since 1999. Have you seen anything this season, Helen, to suggest that this could be the year, under Ronald Koeman, that they kind of smashed that record for good?
Honestly, no. I think for Everton, it probably depends which Liverpool side turn up. When Liverpool play the best, they are a brilliant side to watch. But if they turn up and they don't play as a team, then they can easily be picked apart. So I think it's going to be more a case of which side they're playing against.
I mean, maybe the derby will benefit Liverpool, because when they've played big games, another team will come at them.
Exactly.
Sadio Mane to get another hat-trick, maybe? Is that
Who knows?
Who knows? I have to see what happens there. But speaking of goals, Firmino is going to be taking on Lukaku. It's two very different interpretations of the centre-forward role. Firmino is, I guess, a sort of false nine, some people have called him. Lukaku more of a traditional striker for Everton. If you were a manager, which kind of player would you like to build your attack around, Greg?
I think Lukaku is probably the one you could take out of Everton's team, put him in another team and will thrive in that role, whereas Firmino's success is probably more dependent on the system. But I think it is a case of them both almost being perfect for the roles they're asked to play within their teams. Firmino, I think Liverpool do miss him when he's not there, not just for goal scoring and things like that, but the way he kind of starts the press up front, he's exactly what Klopp wants from that. But yeah, I think Lukaku, if you were to put him in any team, he'd probably thrive more than Firmino would in that role.
We've seen Aguero get a bit of bad press from some quarters because of what he doesn't provide to the team, besides goals, compared to a player like Gabriel Jesus, who was meant to bench him before he got injured for Manchester City. Do you agree with Greg that Firmino is an important player, or do you think that maybe Liverpool could benefit from more of a traditional striker up front?
No, I think he is an important player because he brings options as well. He's not just a kind of lump it up to me and I'll sort it. He knows different styles of playing, and I think that's really been important for Liverpool this season, that he's always, when as soon as you get the ball, you always feel confident that he's going to make something out of it, no matter where he kind of gets it in the pitch.
We were looking at the numbers a little bit earlier on. I think he's actually created more chances inside the box than any other player in the Premier League this season. So maybe it's a case of giving the players running on from deep and wide to score those goals. And speaking of that, Felipe Coutinho, another player who was in amazing form early in the season and he got injured, hasn't quite got back to where he was. Is that what's been missing from Liverpool's team? You were talking earlier, Helen, about how incredible they are when they're at their best. We haven't really seen that recently.
Yeah, I think this game could be a really important one for him to kind of prove himself and prove his place in the team. He usually plays quite well in big games, so this could be his turn to come back and kind of put the injury behind him and have a great game.
Maybe another 40-yard screamer or something. That was kind of, yeah, yeah. That would put the statement down. But Ross Barkley is another player who's actually, while Coutinho struggled, Barkley's actually done really well last few weeks. Didn't play a single minute on England duty, though. Still struggling to break into the team. But since Sir Koeman kind of came out and publicly criticised him, he's really kind of pulled his socks up and doing some great stuff for Everton. Do you think that if it's not Coutinho, this could be a derby where he makes a statement with his performance?
Yeah, definitely. I think Barkley's maybe the ultimate confidence player, and he's full of confidence at the moment. He's in great form. I don't think Koeman will mind at all that he wasn't used for England, because it keeps him fresh. He's had 2 weeks without playing now. I think with the form he's in, he could be the man to make the difference, because Coutinho hasn't really done it in 2017. That injury issue that we mentioned there has really affected him. But Barkley on the other side is another player who is frustrating at times, but he can produce moments of magic, and that's what Everton will need.
Mm. There has been a little bit of a pushback from the praise for Barkley recently, in that people are saying he's running quite hot according to the stats, and we've seen it before. He can be a bit inconsistent over a longer period of time. What do you think he has to do to kind of become the player people think he can become on a more regular basis, Helen?
Ooh, interesting. I don't know. Well, I think I'm going to say when he's great, he's brilliant. But every now and again, he makes a mistake, and then as soon as he's made the mistake, he spends the rest of the game, and you can see he's still thinking about the mistake.
Mm.
So I think for him, it might be more of a mental side rather than a physical side, that if he makes a mistake, he needs to forget it as soon as it's happened and go, right, let's get back into the game.
Mm-hmm. Bit of a perfectionist, maybe?
Yeah, I think Barkley might just be one of those players who maybe will always be like this. I think when players are young, we always assume they'll just eventually iron out those kind of deficiencies and become really consistent. But part of what makes Barkley good, I think, is that he can have these kind of... He can blow hot and cold, because that does produce at times some really stellar performances. I don't think he's ever going to be a player who will be 7 out of 10 every week, but Everton maybe will have to get used to that. And if he can produce a good performance this weekend, they'll think that's worth it.
I mean, there's been talk about him moving from Everton, especially when he's in these great periods of form, to join a top six, top four club. I mean, by the sounds of it, he's never really going to be the player that's going to be good enough on a regular enough basis to justify a move like that.
Yeah,
if we're going down the line that this is what he's going to be like forever.
Exactly, yeah. And Everton, they don't need the money as such. He's an English player. They tend to cost a lot. So I'm not sure that a top four, top six club would get the best value for money if they went for Barkley, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. If Barkley isn't going to go to a top four club, is there any chance that Everton could sneak in themselves? I mean, Lukaku has apparently called off contract talks. He's worried about the ambition of the club to get into the Champions League. They're joint on points with Arsenal, who are currently sixth with 50 points. Okay, Arsenal have two games in hand. But is there any chance that Everton could sneak in, even this season, into the big European places, Helen?
I think they've got a chance to get into the top five. I think Europa League would be superb for them. I mean, it'd be the second year in a row that Koeman's got a side into Europe after getting Southampton there last year.
Mm.
I think for him, getting to fifth would be great. I'm not sure they'll get into the Champions League. Mm. And I don't think they'd want them to get in the Champions League yet either. They're not ready.
Yeah, but I guess they need something to attract bigger names. I mean, Mascheri's got his money, but they need to have kind of a few more baubles to throw at players, I guess. But on that point as well, I mean, we just, before we came on air, it's not live, but you know what I mean. Borussia Mönchengladbach confirmed that Mahoud Dahoud will be joining Borussia Dortmund this summer, a player that Liverpool wanted, and he reportedly turned them down. I mean, I don't think Liverpool are at risk of losing the Champions League, but what does Klopp need to do to attract players of that quality to Anfield, Greg?
I think it really is a Champions League thing, because in a way they maybe punch above their weight in terms of attracting players because of the history of the club. That proves appealing to lots of players. Klopp himself is very charismatic. I can imagine him being very kind of persuasive in contract talks. So I think they're getting the most out of what they can. But unless they're in the Champions League for a sustained period, they can't really compete at the very top level. And Dortmund, obviously not wrapped up Champions League football, but they're in the quarterfinals of this year's competition. Should be in next year, so at the moment they're probably just a step ahead.
Mm. And maybe looking at Liverpool's uneven form this season, how they've kind of dipped and gone up again. Maybe that is a worry for a player looking at coming in. I mean, Dortmund haven't exactly been in the greatest shape either, but maybe you would feel a side like Dortmund with maybe a little bit less competition at the very top of the Bundesliga, he might be a more of a shot of winning things, maybe. But on that point, you look at Liverpool, what do you think they need to add to this team to basically become the more sustained force that Klopp wants to be at the top of the Premier League, Helen?
I think they need to probably have more striking options. I mean, they've got Firmino, who's great, but they need a second kind of option of something different to do if they're having a game and it's the plan's not going as they want it to go. They need something that's going to completely shake up the side and give them an edge.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Sturridge, is it just not going to work for you, though, do you think?
No, I don't think he will. I could see him leaving soon to go. Maybe go somewhere like, not necessarily Stoke, but more kind of middling Premier League club where he's actually going to get a lot more game time. I think that would be more beneficial for him.
Kind of in the Ross Barkley trap in his own way, isn't he?
I guess.
He's probably not going to get another move to another big club.
No, I don't think so. West Ham maybe are a club who have been mentioned. I could see something like that, because I think he will have to take a step down outside of the top six, because he's not currently playing at that level. And all his injury problems as well don't help. So, yeah, I think he will have to take a step down.
Mm. But then again, if he comes on and scores the winner against Everton in the derby, that might do him a world of good as well. But we're going to move on now to Arsenal versus Manchester City, the other big game this weekend. Are we expecting to see any planes over the Emirates? There was a little bit of airborne action over the Hawthorns in their 3-1 loss to West Brom in the last Premier League weekend. Two banners, one Wenger in, Wenger out. If you could send one banner up, what would you put on the message, Helen?
Oh, well, as a Blackpool fan, I suppose at the moment it'd probably be Oyston out. But Blackpool are quite known for having
that. Won't go over Bloomfield Road, though, I imagine.
No, so that's good. But I know Blackpool do tend to put a few banners up. When we got into the Premier League, we sent one over Deepdale at Preston saying, we are superior, enjoy League One.
He didn't go
down very well. No. Simon Grayson, I think, wanted to say he wanted to shoot the plane down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, that didn't go down too well, actually. Yeah.
Well, should we be arming managers with surface to airs, no. Greg, or no? No.
Probably not the best idea, but who am I to tell them what to do?
Yeah. Are there any messages you'd like to see go to the skies in the Premier League?
Well, I did see a good tweet from someone who I can't remember who it was now, apologies, but basically stating that Arsenal fans should take their next argument to the sky, and basically citing the Jackson Martinez age debate from a couple of years ago. So perhaps maybe one banner saying he's 29 and the next one saying he's 28 until he's 29 or whatever the argument was. Yeah. But yeah, Arsenal fans, they've got a lot of material there, haven't they? So it'd be good to see something a bit creative, I think.
But there's probably going to be protests again. It's a massive game. So we were saying this is the biggest week because they've obviously got another game coming up soon as well. Biggest week in Wenger's career, some people have said it. Not sure about that myself. But there's going to be protests. Are we expecting any more planes flying over the Emirates?
I think maybe they need to find a different maybe mode of transport.
A blimp?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
There's obviously the tube station nearby, isn't there? I don't know whether that could be incorporated somehow, but I think that's what we'll all be looking for, isn't it, rather than the action on the pitch, because that's what Arsenal fans obviously made it about last time. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of the action on the pitch, this one's City's to lose, isn't it? The way Arsenal are in, or do you think they can have a resurgence after an international break? Alexis Sanchez had a pretty decent run for Chile. Can he bring that form into the Premier League?
Hopefully. I'm going to say, I think the game depends on how Arsenal play. If they play like they did against West Brom, then they could be in for a serious thumping. But if they actually start playing together again, like they were at the beginning of the season, then it could be a bit more even.
Mm-hmm. Alexis Sanchez has also been linked with a controversial move to Chelsea. An interview which has been translated about 6 or 7 different ways, all with different interpretations, has said that he's happy in London, he's happy at Arsenal. No one's quite sure exactly what he meant by that. Wenger said that there's only one club in London, and that's Arsenal, so he thinks he's going to stay. But what do you make of the whole idea of Alexis Sanchez moving to Chelsea? Is it something that could be a bit of a goer? Or, I mean, would Guardiola want to reunite with him at Manchester City, maybe?
Yeah, Chelsea could happen. I think Eden Hazard obviously being linked with Real Madrid, and if that did go through and Real Madrid tend to get what they want in these situations, then Chelsea would have the money to spend. They'd need that kind of superstar, wide forward type player. So
they've still got the Oscar money as well in the bank.
Yeah, I know. They've done brilliantly out of the Chinese Super League, haven't they? They've got so much money back. City, I think, is probably less likely just because Sterling, Sane, they're young, they're playing so well this season. Mm. I think that's where Guardiola will look to kind of improve them further rather than spending big money on a guy. I think he turns 29 next season, Sanchez, so he's obviously at a different stage. But Chelsea possibly a go, and that would be interesting. I'm sure Arsenal fans wouldn't be too happy about that at all.
No, definitely not. I think some people obviously on Twitter saying it would be more kind of heart-wrenching than even Van Persie going to Man United, because There's almost
Ashley
even
Cole
more,
as well.
Yeah, but it almost feels like the level of angst and anger between Chelsea and Arsenal's only gotten worse of late.
I think you'd see some more shirts being burnt.
Yeah,
if it happened.
And definitely maybe some plane banners on fire as well.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. But City have improved this second half of the season. They're looking better. They're looking closer to what Guardiola has been trying to build at the Etihad. What's impressed you most about how they've come on recently? Because obviously people are talking about Guardiola's a fraud, he's failed, it's not working. Some people even suggest he could be sacked at one point. It was never going to happen, but they are looking like a better team now.
Yeah, well, I think they've actually had chance to kind of gel, and Guardiola's needed time to kind of get his ideas across the team and what he wanted to do. So I think they were always kind of going to have that kind of period where it wasn't quite going to work until they got used to the system. But they're playing as a team and as a squad, and they've got to that point now where when players are coming onto the pitch halfway through the game, they're adding to it rather than not actually making an impact, which I think is the big thing that I've seen change.
John Stones was actually quite impressive for England as well. Do you think that he's also benefited from this time to kind of adapt and get on the level that Pep's wanting to see from him?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to really finish the season strong. I think the way he played for England just shows how much he's kind of improved and how much he's probably learned from Guardiola as well. Mm. He's definitely come on leaps and bounds as a player. He was always a good player, but he's now looking like he's going to be a really solid.
Mm. In midfield, as it always is with Guardiola, that could be where the game is won and lost. And while we may see Granit Xhaka playing a deep line role for Arsenal, we may see Yaya Toure play a similar role for City. Oxlade-Chamberlain's position on the pitch might be quite interesting to see, because he played in a central midfield position for England against Lithuania and got absolutely panned for his performance. He was absolutely dreadful. Didn't provide the ideal drive that people expected from him through the middle. But do you think that Wenger should persist with him there for Arsenal?
I think he has played quite well at times in that midfield role in the last couple of months for Arsenal. And I think Wenger will put more stock in his performances at club level rather than that England game. I think a lot of it will depend on Ozil. If Ozil was playing number 10, then do you want Oxlade-Chamberlain in the midfield too? Mm. I'm not sure. I think he can work in a 3, but a 2 is a different question. But I think I agree with your broader point there about midfield, because City, as good as they have been, and De Bruyne and Silva obviously world-class, but Toure really struggled in that Liverpool game. It was almost too quick for him. And whenever Liverpool got bodies around him and kind of hassled him, they really did struggle and force some good turnovers there. So I think if Arsenal can do the same, then that could be a route to goal for them.
I guess Wijnaldum is kind of what Oxlade-Chamberlain needs to become for Arsenal. Like a very similar guy. He was more attacking player at Newcastle. He's come deep and he's playing like almost like a box-to-box role at times for Liverpool. So maybe one to watch as a potential kind of a tactical quirk of the game to look out for there. But what of Mesut Ozil? Are you expecting him to play, Helen, or are we going to see him kind of linger on the bench more? He's been ill, he's been half fit, he's been all different things. He's actually come out and said that he's been unfairly criticised and targeted during the international break for Arsenal's form. What do you think of his status at the club at the moment? And would you play him against City?
I think if I was manager, I would play him against City. Give him the chance to kind of show the fans that they're wrong. Because if he has come out and said that he's been, like you say, unfairly criticised, so he's going to want to come out and prove that he is right and that he is still the player that everyone wants him to be.
Mm.
Whether or not he actually does, he could end up being a kind of super sub if they're not playing very well and end up coming on and hopefully changing the game if they were doing poorly. But I'd play him.
He's not the biggest, most high-impact player, though, is he? Even coming off the bench, he's more of a kind of a background guy who pops in and out of games. And what do you expect of a player like that? Should you just accept the fact that he's a playmaker, he's going to drift in and out, or Arsenal fans and his critics right to maybe ask for more from Mesut Ozil?
I think with all these things, it's the balance, isn't it, between the two extremes. I think there are times where perhaps he could kind of assert himself on games more, particularly in the big games, but overall, that's just his style, isn't it? And last season, first half of last season especially, we saw the benefits of his kind of of his like elusive kind of style of play at number 10. And I think you just have to accept that he's not going to be a guy who runs across the pitch 100 miles an hour like someone like Sanchez. I think they're just different players, and that's probably ultimately you have to accept that.
Helen, earlier you said about Liverpool's form and Coutinho's form and how it's again been a bit uneven. Start of the season, Mesut Ozil looked kind of unleashed, liberated by this new role behind Sanchez. He didn't look elusive. He looked quite direct, actually. He was running at players, he was scoring goals. But why do you think that hasn't continued further into the season?
No, maybe Arsenal as a whole have kind of, they started off really strongly and then kind of slipped. And they kind of seem to have done that as a team, and no one's really kind of stepped up to the mark and gone, right, no, we need to get out of this. So
it should be like Sanchez and 10 people kind of going, oh, what do we do now? That's,
pretty much. It's just like they kind of ran out of ideas. Like people started to work out how to play them, and all of a sudden 11 players just stood there and went, I don't know what to do.
Mm. As we said earlier, they are level with Everton on 50 points. I mean, if Everton have got a chance of getting fifth, Arsenal are surely out of the race of the Champions League, aren't they?
I don't know. I wouldn't rule them out yet. I know they're in bad form, but they do kind of have experience of closing this gap, and the two games in hand means they will be level with Liverpool. United are ahead of them if they win their games in hand, so they won't leap into the top four with those two victories. But I think one of them's at Leicester at home, so again, you'd probably expect them to win that Leicester Champions League coming up as well. So I wouldn't rule them out yet, but they're going to have to get kind of 7 wins or something like that from the remaining 10, 11 games that they've got, I think.
Other Arsenal players that have seen their form dip are Theo Walcott and Alex Iwobi, and maybe that's no coincidence with how it hasn't quite worked with that system that you're talking about with Liverpool. Maybe that's what Ozil needs to thrive. But one player that hasn't gone anywhere, he's been consistent whenever he's been called upon, talk about a super sub, Olivier Giroud. We expecting to see him come on the field against City? Could he do a job against Guardiola's men?
Got to. Surely he's got to be the first person that Wenger's going to put on the squad. I mean, he's had an absolutely superb season. So I think he's just got to build his team around him if he wants any chance of winning.
So would you start Giroud over Sanchez up front? Ooh, interesting. Is that because you think that City are a bit suspect in the air at the back? Or?
Yeah, and I think Giroud is going to want to prove that he should be starting. So surely in a big game that you're going to want to win, especially if you still think that you can get into the top four, then change it, completely confuse them, because they'll be expecting you to start Sanchez. So just confuse City altogether and start Giroud.
Would you go with that, Greg?
I'd probably go with Sanchez. I think City are probably most vulnerable. They'll play a high line. We know what Guardiola wants to do. And they often defend one-on-one at the back. They really do leave their defenders. We were saying about John Stones earlier, and I think it is hard for a young defender to cope under Guardiola when you're not used to it, because he does put big demands on them. So I think Sanchez will have lots of space kind of in the channels to counter-attack. So I think that's probably the way Arsenal should go.
Anything besides the obvious threats that City will pose to Arsenal? We talked about De Bruyne, Silva, who's in fantastic form, both as a creator and a controller in midfield. Sané, Sterling as well. Aguero, he's not exactly been doing it in the big games much this season. But is there anything else you're expecting to see from City that may kind of surprise Arsenal more so than usual?
Well, that's the thing with City, isn't it? And Guardiola, you just never know. Whenever the City team sheet is released, it almost takes 5 minutes to work out what they're trying to do, and then it's not that anyway. I think touching on Touré earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if Fernandinho came into midfield instead. He's been playing at right back a little bit. He was suspended before that, so he's not actually played in midfield consistently since the first half of the season when he was really good. I think he could come in, but it is all about Silva and De Bruyne in that midfield area, and I think the front five in terms of personnel will be what they have been. And they'll be difficult to stop for Arsenal.
Another potential angle for Arsenal, because we've got to be fair to them, we've got to give a chance. At fullback, when they're good, they're very good. And Hector Bellerin, he's another player who's lost form this season, but he's also been linked with a bit of a mischievous move to Manchester City. So if you want to take it that way, this could be a bit of an audition for him. But Arsenal fans will not want to view it that way. But we all know how poor City are in defence in the wide areas. Is a player like Hector Bellerin someone who could really tip the balance in Arsenal's favour in this game, Helen?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like you say, he kind of lost his form, but when he is on form, he can be really strong on the back, and I think he helps to kind of put the back four kind of in their positions and sets them and make sure that they're strong. So I think they're going to struggle because they're going to have a lot of pressure coming at them, and I think it'll be if he's in form, then it's going to be fine. If not, then it could be really bad.
It could be really, really bad. I mean, 3-1 loss away to West Brom was pretty poor. I mean, we saw the reaction of Arsenal fans after that result. And they're going to be going away themselves to Old Trafford this weekend to take on Manchester United. We've seen how much United struggle to put away their chances at home against teams of all sizes and systems. Mourinho will also be missing Zlatan and De Herrera through suspension, Paul Pogba, Phil Jones, Smalling, and maybe even Fellaini through injury. Are United in for some trouble? They haven't got any players to play, have they, Helen?
I think it could be West Brom's this one. I really think they've got to be fancying the chances. They had that game before, like you say, before the international break, so they're coming off on a high of that. They're a strong side. They've already beaten Leicester and Saints this season. So I think they're going to be going thinking, we could get something out of this. Absolutely.
And their key players have actually one of the clubs, if you looked at player by player, they probably had the best international break. Okay, Chadley Chadley was very good in the friendly. He wasn't great. It wasn't too good in the actual qualifier, but Chris Brunt got an assist in Northern Ireland's win. Johnny Evans, very, very strong. Gareth McCauley, obviously great for Northern Ireland as well. They're not only that win over Arsenal, but their players, even coming from their countries, are going to be carrying some great momentum into this game, Greg.
Yeah, and it's the game that this season United have tended to straddle in. They've drawn at home to Stoke, West Ham, Burnley, Hull, Bournemouth this season. West Brom will kind of, you know what you're going to get with West Brom. They'll sit deep, they'll make life difficult, and it'll be up to United to break them down. And they probably do have more of a counter-attacking threat this season, West Brom as well, which we saw against Arsenal, as well as the set pieces. So I would definitely give them a chance. Maybe a win might be slightly beyond them, but you wouldn't be too surprised if they picked up a point given United's struggles in these games.
Mm-hmm. And who do you see coming in to fill this kind of patchwork quilt worth of holes in Mourinho's first team? Because they're dropping like flies.
Yeah, especially some of the defenders, Jones, Smalling out. I mean, they both have their deficiencies, but they are defenders, aren't they? Mm. So,
and I think at least Jones could be out for the whole season by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I think United played an interesting kind of system at Barrett last time. Mm. They started with three at the back and very quickly moved to four. Valencia was playing right midfield rather than right back. Gerrit Bailly was right back instead. I don't know whether Mourinho would go for a more kind of conventional back four from the start here with Valencia back at right back, but I guess Marcos Rojas, who's been quite good this season, actually, to be fair. I think there were doubts raised about him that he'll probably play centre-back. And Ashley Young, we saw him kind of against Borough and in games before that, so maybe he'll be at left-back.
All about the experienced end product, Mr. Ashley Young. But that's the defence. What are you thinking in terms of the attack, Helen? I mean, Marcus Rashford, he's the man of the moment in almost every moment for Man United these days. Is it all on him, or are you thinking Anthony Martial could step up? A lot of people have been asking to see him return to a centre-forward role. With Ibrahimovic out, Mourinho's going to have to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rashford's the obvious choice. I mean, like you say, he's every time he plays, everyone just loves him. But maybe Martial come on as a substitute to kind of give them another option partway through the game if Rashford's getting tired or something. So I think United are going to be stronger than people are expecting them, even without the main players, because I think those two are the types of players that go out there and want to prove themselves.
Mm. There's an argument in some quarters that, in a way, Ibrahimovic actually makes them quite one-dimensional because he demands so much of the ball, so much of the attention of the attack. Could it be that if you've got players like Mkhitaryan, Rashford, Martial, all kind of overlapping, Lingard as well, overlapping, overrunning each other, a lot more fluidity, a bit more like we were talking about earlier when Arsenal at their best, all that kind of that inter movement between the players, would that actually be kind of what becomes of this team after Zlatan retires or does leave?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it gives them a completely different kind of level of playing. I mean, I'm personally not a fan of Zlatan.
Oh yeah,
he's a good player. I just don't like him off the pitch. So,
oh, right, okay.
So I'm not going to say very much.
You're not going to dare to Zlatan.
Yes, no, exactly. Yeah. So I think it like you say, he demands so much of the ball that actually they only really have one way of playing while he's on the pitch. So this could kind of completely bring out something different in United, and you could see what their future's kind of going to bring.
Mm. Do you think that's the future that Mourinho wants, though, Greg?
Yeah, possibly. I'm sure they'll be, when Zlatan does go, they'll be looking for a sign-in as well at the top of the pitch. I know they've spent a lot of money already, but Griezmann, someone like him, has been linked a lot. I think Ibrahimovic obviously had a great season, 15 Premier League goals, but if you look at those games that I mentioned before where they've drawn at home, he has missed a lot of chances. And I think I agree with what you're saying there, that to kind of unseat a team like West Brom, who plays quite deep, I think that flurry of movement where you've got players interchanging rather than kind of a central, quite static centre-forward as good as he is, could actually be the thing that works for them.
Mm. Interestingly, Zlatan's missed the most what they define as big chances of any player in the Premier League this season. And United as a whole, I think they're bottom for converting big chances, 18th for converting chances in general. I think they're actually third for chance creation. So they're creating opportunities. They're just not putting them away. So maybe a change of tact up front could be the way forward. We're going to move on now to the other games in the Premier League. Burnley hosts Spurs. News that Eric Lemayer has been definitely ruled out for the rest of the season. I think a lot of people assume that was the case anyway. Means that they have been without, with Kane out as well, that they are lacking options perhaps up front, with Vincent Janssen still not quite cutting the mustard. Can Pochettino count on the resources available to him in attack against a team with one of the most formidable home records in the division?
I mean, Burnley are superb at home. There's no doubt about it. But I think Spurs will be absolutely fine during the game. I think Son has had a really good season. He's like put some really, really good performances in. So this could be his time to kind of really, again, show what he's made of.
Mm. Dele Alli as well. I mean, people forget he's 6'2". He's almost built like a striker in some ways. He's kind of got a bit of everything in the final third, doesn't he, really?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't be too surprised if Alli started up front here, because against Southampton last time out, Pochettino started with Son, but they couldn't really make the ball stick up front in the second half, and Southampton really came back into it.
Mm.
So he brought on Winks for Son and pushed Alli up front. That's how they finished the game. And his goal record this season, 14 in 27 Premier League appearances.
I was looking at it the other day and I thought it was a typo.
I know, it's ridiculous. It's like what a genuine out-and-out striker would be pleased with that. And he has become more of a second striker, I think, this season, particularly when they play the kind of 3-4-2-1. So pushing him slightly further forward probably might be something that Pochettino is considering.
And just a word on Harry Winks. I mean, he seems like a player that's dividing opinions, almost in the way like Michael Carrick did a few years ago. Some people don't quite get what he does. Some people think he's the best thing since sliced bread. Where do you stand on Harry Winks, Helen?
I really like him. I think he's going to be a really, really good player. I think he's still got a lot to learn, but I think in the future he's going to be one that we keep kind of going back to and saying how good a performance he's had.
Apparently he's got his grandparent or his father's Spanish, and there was a little bit of talk he might get called up by Spain, which to me sounds a bit fanciful.
I suppose they're lacking in midfielders, Spain, aren't they?
So I
suppose they need him.
Is his middle name Xavi, maybe? I don't know. We'll have to see. But what do you make of Harry Winks?
Yeah, I really like him as well. I really like Carrick, so maybe there is a connection there. But yeah, I think he's been really good. And they kind of, in Pochettino's first season in midfield, the likes of Mason, Bentaleb, who have since been let go. And especially,
he does look a cut above compared to those, doesn't he?
Especially Bentaleb, though. There were some questions about, especially his form this season has been quite good, whether Tottenham should have kept him. But obviously, if Pochettino has seen Winks in the background, then maybe that's part of the reason why he was happy to let him go.
Like Fabregas and Vieira all over again, but in white rather than red. Maybe not, we'll have to see. Moving on now to Hull City versus West Ham. As things stand, Bilic is apparently not going to be offered a new contract once his current deal runs out. We've seen problems with him when he was manager of Spartak Moscow and Beşiktaş in Istanbul in Turkey as well. He doesn't seem to do well in the second season at clubs. Well, why do you think that is? Is he more of an international manager? He was great with Croatia.
Yeah, he was really good with Croatia, yeah. I do have a lot of sympathy for him this season, though, to be honest. They're not far off mid-table at all. I think 3 points off 10th. But that's still definitely within their grasp. They could finish 9th. That's still within their reach. They've had the whole stadium issue, which is not of his doing at all. Some really poor recruitment in the summer, which, again, I don't think is his kind of not full responsibility anyway. Payet, obviously, they had their best player leave and in quite acrimonious circumstances. So I think actually he's done a decent job, and West Ham, I think, probably overachieved a little bit last season, and they've probably regressed to the mean to some extent. And with all those issues, I think he's done all right, to be fair. So I wouldn't be too surprised if they did finish mid-table, but West Ham need to kind of think what they're doing if they do get rid of him and think who they're going to get, because it could be one of those that they look back on and regret.
We've seen all the problems with the London Stadium as well. And West Ham, I think in the summer, we're talking about Champions League football. Maybe not this year, but as a long-term goal. Are they just getting ahead of themselves and they kind of raising expectations above what's fair on Bilic, do you think?
I think they tried to do too much too fast, maybe. They got excited when they had a really good season last year. But I just think Bilic has been unlucky. I don't think he's kind of... the problems aren't completely his fault. Everything that's kind of gone on in the background with the stadium and Payet, and he's just been completely unlucky. I think they really need to stick with him. And next season, their second season at the stadium, they've got all those kind of problems sorted, Payet's and everything they can completely forget about. They can have the summer to rebuild. I think they'll have a great season next season.
The fans as well still seem quite behind him. And I think with the stadium issue that obviously fans have been very divided about and very unpopular with some of them, I think just from West Ham owners' point of view, maybe getting rid of a popular manager, given the pressure they've come under, is maybe not the wisest thing at the moment.
Yeah, I agree.
Interesting how that develops. I'm going to come to your patch now, Helen. You cover a lot of football on the South Coast. Southampton take on Bournemouth this weekend. Is Gabbiadini going to be fit for it, do you reckon?
I think it's going to be touch and go. I think it could be one of those that's going to be a bit of a last-minute kind of decision.
Without him, who do you reckon is going to score the goals then? I mean, obviously, Bournemouth, if he keeps up his form and he scored the hat-trick, Joshua King's the man to look for. But Southampton, I mean, we know what they were like before Gabbiadini arrived. He's been so hailed because of the impact he's had on a team that haven't struggled to create chances, a bit like Man United, but they haven't done too well putting him away when he hasn't been playing for them.
Yeah, I agree. I think if he's fit to play, then it's got to be Southampton's to win. But I could see them struggling without him. They don't really have too many ideas when he's not on the pitch. So they could struggle. And I think with Bournemouth, I mean, players like Jack Wilshere are going to be wanting to really prove a point. He's been struggling to get into the side in recent weeks. So if he came on and scored in the Derby game, then all of a sudden people would be loving him again. So I think Bournemouth have probably... I do think Southampton will win, but I think Bournemouth probably are going to really give them more of a fight than they're expecting.
How much of a derby atmosphere will there be? Is it actually... as kind of fiercely contested as a derby should be this match.
Yeah, I think it's one of those that as soon as you kind of get there with the atmosphere, it's always a cracking atmosphere, and Bournemouth fans are superb whether they're home or away, so they're going to bring some real atmosphere into the stadium.
Not going to be quite Portsmouth though, is it?
No.
That's a whole nother level.
I think just touching on Wilshere again there, it's quite interesting because he, as Helen says, he hasn't been playing in the team in the last few weeks, and Howe doesn't seem to really trust him in the midfield too. He's played him number 10 most of the season. Since then he's kind of paired Afobe and King up front, so there's no space there for Wilshere. And he seems to be behind kind of Gosling, Harriata and Andrew Sermon in central midfield. So for whatever reason, Howe doesn't really seem to fancy him there.
Well, he doesn't seem to be fit as well.
No, and you kind of think a few years ago, personally anyway, I thought that was his best position where he can drive forward a bit rather than at number 10.
Yeah.
But it's almost a bit of a worrying sign if Eddie Howe, with respect to Bournemouth, a mid-table, lower mid-table team, doesn't really think he can do a job there at the moment.
What do you think of Wilshere's prospects, having spent a season at Bournemouth?
I think I've always kind of thought he was maybe a bit overrated, personally. But
that
I
night in Barcelona, oh.
Yeah, but one game doesn't sort the rest of your career out at the end
absolutely.
Of the day. But I think it's not necessarily about Wilshere either. I mean, when they lost Nathan Ake, who they completely and utterly relied on, they really struggled to find form again because they had literally planned their whole team around this one player who then went without them actually expecting him to go in the January transfer window. And they really then had a run of terrible form, which completely knocked them down the league. So I think for Howe, there's probably a bit of kind of wanting to make sure that the rest of his team and the rest of his squad are getting that many games that when Wiltshire does go at the end of the season, they're still going to have a great squad for next season.
Because, I mean, we talked before about players and teams that work in a system. Bournemouth, it's a system without stars, isn't it, really? It's so interconnected. I guess that's the focus. It's got to be on the collective rather than Jack Wilshere.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting to see how that goes. Probably quite a good match as well.
I think it'll be a great match.
Even if Southampton can't finish their dinner. Chelsea, meanwhile, take on Crystal Palace at Stamford Bridge. The Eagles on a run of 3 straight wins at the moment. It looks like Big Sam's magic formula is finally beginning to do its work. But Conte's team, surely going to put an end to that. They look driven, focused, determined to win the best possible league finish they can. Not league finish, you know what I mean? The best possible points tally they can as champions, and they want the double with the FA Cup as well. We've had a few questions, though, about what they might do next season. King Danny on Twitter asked, with all the transfer rumours going on, Hazard, Lukaku, Sanchez, is that the trio that could dominate the league if all things go to plan in the summer?
I think it would be, yeah, but a very ambitious plan that is, to get 2 of those signings, and as we were saying earlier, to keep Hazard as well, which could be contingent who they bring in if he goes or stays. I'm not sure Chelsea will be able to pull off those 2 deals and keep Hazard. So
maybe Diego Costa for 100 million to China?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, as we were saying, they've done well out of China, so maybe if they can ship Costa off for 200 million, then maybe, but yeah, difficult, but yeah, what front 3 that would be.
Let's say you could only pick one of them. Which out of Lukaku or Sanchez would you buy for Chelsea?
Sanchez, definitely.
100%. Where would you see him fitting into the team?
I think that's the thing. I think we said before, if Hazard goes, then he would be a superb player to go in the middle.
Mm-hmm. And just let's say that Diego Costa goes regardless, or they want to get a replacement. We've had another question through from Massimo Dariani, who asked, Belotti, Lukaku or Morata to replace Diego Costa at Chelsea?
If I could choose any, I'd probably go for Lukaku as the one I would target first. He's obviously got the Premier League experience, which could help, and I think he's probably at the moment the best of those 3. Belotti is a really talented player, though, but if I was Chelsea looking at spending the fee that they would want for him,
it's
his buyout, isn't it? Yeah. I think you'd maybe want to wait for maybe 1-2 more seasons, especially because he hasn't played kind of Champions League yet. So, yeah, I think Lukaku would be the safest bet, but then again, probably the hardest to get, so it's interesting how they deal with that.
Obviously, Conte's worked with Morata before at Juventus, but then, I mean, I'm not, this isn't me dismissing him because he's got a fantastic record, especially in the Champions League and in big games for Real Madrid and Juventus, but you look at Morata and then you think they've already got Batshuayi, they've got Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who's been used more and more as a forward both for England under-21s and for Chelsea. Would you maybe stick with one of those 2 first rather than looking for another striker, if not to replace Costa, then to add more depth in that position?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think that's the thing with Chelsea. They've got such a great squad that there are players that haven't been getting games that are
Tammy Abraham as well.
They're an absolute superb standard. So maybe they don't need to go out spending hundreds of million pounds to get such a big name player when they've got quite a good squad already.
Moving on now to Watford versus Sunderland. Can the Black Cats emerge from the international break with the momentum to save themselves, or is it gone?
I don't know. If they show the Britishness that Moyes has been demanding, maybe.
But well, we have triggered Article 50 now, so maybe this is what David Moyes has been waiting for. Maybe
they've finished 10th now.
Yeah.
No, I think it is going to be really difficult for them. But Watford, not in great form themselves, so this is a game that you've got to look at. Sunderland have had a few of these matches, but if you can't win this, you're kind of probably thinking you're going to have to be preparing for the Championship. So it's a huge game. And Watford, I think they're 7 points clear, so it doesn't look kind of any imminent danger, but they do need to pick up a few more points to be sure, so they'll fancy their chances in this one too.
Mazzari's going to be under pressure, isn't he? They haven't exactly been slow coming forward and getting rid of managers, Watford.
No, exactly. I mean, Watford lost 1-0 to Palace before the international break, so they're going to be wanting to bounce back from that because they were expected to win that game and they didn't particularly play very well, so they're going to really want to come back, and especially with it being at home, they want to kind of going to prove to the fans that they're still fighting. And like you say, yes, they are 7 points clear, but a couple more losses and that could easily slip you very close to the relegation zone.
Moving on to the other two matches in the Premier League this weekend, Leicester take on Stoke City in what's probably going to be a battle between the mercurial attackers out wide, who's unpredictable, inconsistent wingers turn up on the day. Swansea meanwhile take on Middlesbrough at home, Fernando Llorente against Alvaro Negredo. Llorente's kind of the player that Negredo should be, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, Llorente scored 28% of Swansea's goals so far this season. It's a ridiculous stat. So he's obviously having a great game. I think Negredo's probably going to benefit now that they've obviously changed managers. I think he was kind of really taking the negativity on board, and he seemed to get a lot of stick. So I think we could see his season kind of start to turn around now.
We've seen what Paul Clement's done for Swansea, kind of giving them a breath of fresh air. Do you reckon now that Middlesbrough are, as Helen says, kind of unshackled from the negativity of Karanka, they could have a bit of a turnaround of their own?
Yeah, that's definitely what they'll be hoping for. I just wonder how easy it is to suddenly unshackle the players. We did see kind of a brief spell in that Man United game, but I think a lot of that was to do with Mourinho kind of really going defensive. I think they ended up with 6 defenders on the pitch at the end and quite invited the pressure. But before that, Middlesbrough was still struggling to create chances, not many shots on target. So I think it won't be easy to just suddenly kind of unleash the players like that. And maybe apart from Adama Traore, they maybe don't really have the players who can suddenly go out there and express themselves in that way. So I think it will be difficult for Middlesbrough. And Swansea there, they do need the points in this one because they've slipped back a little bit. So
lost the last two,
a lot to play for, yeah.
Yeah. That's all the action in the Premier League, but there's some other big fixtures in Europe and in the Championship. So I'm going to ask you guys what your game of the weekend to watch for our wonderful listeners to tune in for. Helen, I'm going to come to you first.
Yeah, I'm going to the Championship and Reading v Leeds. It's 4th v 5th. Yapstan came out after their game in December and said that Leeds' kind of style of play was poor.
He's not a fan, is he?
He really doesn't like their style of play at all. So I think that's kind of, I mean, Leeds fans aren't going to let that drop. So I'm sure.
Well, they do like playing the villain
something.
As well, don't they? Yeah. So maybe they might.
So I'm sure there'll be some kind of something like that. But they're both wanting to get into the playoffs. You could actually kind of see that as a playoff final potential game. I definitely think. But I think it's going to be a really close one. But I think it's going to be one that's going to actually have a lot of kind of chances and a lot of action as well.
And Yapstan's actually tipped as a potential success to the Village at West Ham. So another aspect to look out for. There, Greg, what's going to be your match to watch of the weekend?
I was split between two, but I've just gone for the Royal Derby between Schalke and Dortmund just because it's always such a great game, such a great occasion. There'll be great atmosphere there. And I think Dortmund's maybe got Leipzig in their sights now. They're only 3 points behind them. Schalke are a bit less to play for. They're down in 9th, not had a great season domestically. But
these games are always special, though.
Yeah, exactly. They'll be really up for this despite that. And Dortmund, they're just so fun to watch. They occasionally let you down, suffer some defeats where they probably shouldn't, but players like Dembele and Pulisic and these young players, I think they're always worth watching. So
And Rafa Guerrero as well. I think another player had a really good international break for Portugal as well. Definitely loads to tune in for there. And there's also obviously a big game in Italy with Napoli hosting Juventus. Juventus fully in control in the Serie A title race, but one to look out for if you're a fan of Italian football.
Higuain as well, of course.
Of course.
Going back to the San Paolo, so Juve have struggled a little bit in some of these away games this season at Inter Milan. So not a foregone conclusion despite their dominant lead at the top.
We're going to move on to the final questions now to wrap up the podcast. We've had a few quite deep questions off Twitter this week. Matt Brownie Cake asks, are we hypothetical of tactics, player performance for the sake of a conversation, or does it actually give fans better insight on the game? I guess we're kind of all in an industry where we have to get the clicks keep coming in and write the articles, but do you think there's anything in that, that maybe we overplay the tactical side of things?
Sometimes. I think it case-by-case basis, isn't it? There's plenty of good kind of tactical coverage, and I think it is important, but at the same time, you do have to take into account other factors. But I think it's just the nature of how big football is now. It's always going to be covered, and every game we kind of... There's lots of analysis of that, especially in the Premier League and the top leagues around Europe. So I think it's inevitable, really, and I'd probably rather read something about how the game is actually panned out tactically rather than kind of planes over stadiums.
That's a fair point. On the player performance point, it's a team game, obviously, but it does seem like football is more and more focused on the kind of the individual charisma and the kind of almost the brand of certain players. You've seen Pogba have his own hashtag this season in the Premier League. Do you think there's a point in that as well, that maybe we're too focused on the players, Helen?
No, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that people want to go watch. Everyone has the favourite. Everyone has players that they don't like. So I think in thoughts on individual players, I think that will always kind of be the case, because people want to know, especially if clubs have gone out and spent millions of pounds, then people are going to want to know what they're doing for the club and were they worth the money or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, if your system's working, it's usually to put an individual player in the right position to go and destroy a defence, isn't it? So it is still all about the individuals, even though it's a team game. But speaking of the players, the World Players Association put out a press release yesterday announcing their intention to bring together players from across elite sport. We're talking NFL, NBA, rugby, football, all the rest of it, to protect and promote workers' rights and human rights for athletes across professional sport. And there's been a lot of talk about the future of transfer fees, whether they're going to be abandoned or got rid of by players kind of taking a step beyond the Bosman ruling in the future. Something to look out for if you're interested in the legal side of football. But on that note, Matt Brownie Cake is back again with another question. Why do fans compare their job situation to that of players when it comes to performances, but not when it comes to changing employer? Like, if I want to get a new job, I can go and apply for... Not, don't worry, Squawker, I'm going nowhere. But if I wanted to do, I can go and
come
apply for a new job.
Come and get me, please.
Well, yeah. It's going to be in the press tomorrow. But if I want to go and get a new job, I can go and apply for one, hand him a notice, all the rest of it. Players can't do that, can they?
No, and I think it's kind of... It's probably a good point. I mean, if you kind of look at this situation of all the players that have gone over to China and a kind of absolute uproar about these players moving for money, but then if you look at the normal kind of situation, we have hundreds of people across the country moving to Dubai for more money, so yeah, it's not really that different.
Yeah. Is it unfair that we don't kind of give footballers the benefit of the doubt? I mean, if you got offered a job to go and write about football in China for, I don't know, what, 10, 20 times your salary, you'd probably consider it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, probably consider it, yeah.
I'm on the plane already.
No, absolutely, yeah. I think it's probably one of those things where players are almost there to be shot at, and we see it kind of from fans, from wider sources as well. When the Olympics come around, we always hear, why can't footballers be more like the great Olympians? Yeah. Stuff like that. So I think part of it is inevitable, unfortunately, but it's true. And someone like Costa, who was Diego Costa, linked with China in January, when he was growing up in Brazil, he wasn't probably dreaming of playing for Chelsea. He might not have even heard of them at that stage. So players will always follow the best offer, and sometimes that is financially, just like it is for the rest of us. So
I think mainly he was thinking, I can use football to get out of poverty. So,
well, exactly, yeah. And at the moment, in the next 10 years, maybe China will be the number one destination to do that. So I don't think there's anything kind of... We shouldn't delude ourselves that it's always kind of about this grand idea to play the game in certain areas. I think a lot of it is financial, and there's nothing wrong with that, because it's the same as everyone else.
Yeah, that's the world we live in.
When Oscar moved, he kind of touched on that and said that if you'd have told a young kid in a favela that he could be earning this much money, there's absolutely no way would you turn it down. And if you've ever been in that kind of situation where you've been in so much poverty, then you're never going to turn down such a huge move.
And if you're a father as well, you can provide for your kids. If you get a move to China and you're a big player, you can provide for your kids as well. This is the kind of thing that can completely change a family over generations. So, I mean, I don't really think you can hold it against footballers for making the most of the opportunities, because as well, it's become a cliche, but it's a short career as well, being a professional footballer. May as well make the most out of it while you can. A bit of a more lighthearted question to finish the pod. As many people may have seen, one poor American journalist at Bastian Schweinsteiger's unveiling press conference for Chicago Fire asked the former German international if he can win the World Cup with the MLS side. Sorry, MLS side. I always forget whether you can use the or not in those kind of things. After a bit of confusion, he then went back to say, no, really, can you win the World Cup with Chicago Fire? And I think the team's director of football said, we don't really compete for that trophy. But if they did, and if clubs could enter the tournament, I want to ask you guys, if you could pick one club to send to Russia next year to compete in the 2018 World Cup, who would you pick and why? And for a little bit of extra spice, we're assuming that all the actual internationals will be going to tournament with their countries as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very tough, this. I was really struggling. Because you don't know how to take it. Do you try and get and kind of 7 out of 10 players who are all going to be available? But I kind of went for the big guys, and I thought of Real Madrid with my first thought, because Wales still might make it, but they're struggling a bit. So you think Bale might be available. Karim Benzema is not really involved in the front setup at the moment, so that's two big stars there.
Who's going to play in defence, though?
Yeah, that's where it kind of fell down a little bit, but I kind of put forward maybe Zidane could play somewhere. I don't know if that's allowed in this hypothetical Chicago Fire world, but yeah.
I think we'll allow it. Schweinsteiger's retired from internationals, so Zidane's retired from football. He can come back as well.
Oh yeah, he'd still probably be amazing as well. So
yeah, definitely. Helen, what about yourself?
I was kind of going more down the... I'm obviously a very optimistic England fan, I think. Because I was kind of trying to work out which kind of team has the most of the under-23 side for the England squad. Because the under-23s are doing quite well at the moment. So I was kind of going more maybe Stoke, because you've got some Scottish players in there with like Charlie Adam and something like that. Yeah. So they're not going to be going, I doubt. Sorry. Sorry if they suddenly make it.
They got a good result, actually. Yeah. But they haven't done too well getting to major tournaments recently. You would kind of bet against them in a way, wouldn't you? But on that note, what about Celtic?
Not a bad show, actually.
Yeah, I'm thinking more. One of the teams to my mind was Athletic Club, Bilbao, because they're a really tight-knit group. They're not going to have too many players going away to play for Spain. Maybe that kind of rhythm. If Valverde doesn't go to Barcelona, they'd be pretty much set up as they were. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe, I mean, I don't know if people saw on Squawker this week, but we made a Football Manager League where we made 20 teams of clones. So maybe that's another one we should try out on the game to see what happens for a bit. A bit of fun, just a bit of fun. But anyway, that's all we've got time for today on the podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in and listening to us. Helen, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
We'll have to get you on again very soon. And Greg, your fourth time. We'll have to make it 5 as well in the near future.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
No problem, thank you.
No problem. And join us again next week. Nick English will be hosting the podcast on Monday to review all the weekend's action on the first weekend of Premier League football after the international break. I'll be back on Friday, recording this on Thursday to go out on Friday. It'll be out. The next one will be out next week, so do tune in for that and see you soon.